Our next presenter, is Glenn Compton with Minnesota 88. Minnesota 88 is a Florida not-for-profit organization created and incorporated in 1968. Its environmental protection efforts protecting the public health and preservation of the environment span over the last 40 years. And Glenn is going to talk to us about phosphate mining impacts, gyp stacks, and gaps in agency regulation. Glenn?
Yes, my name is Glenn Compton. I'm here on behalf of Minnesota 88. I'm a school teacher by trade, and so is my wife. She's passing out the handouts. Of course, you're going to get a handout from a school teacher. And I was hoping to start out with a little quiz. I don't know if this is going to work with the time that I have.
But we'll see how it goes anyhow. Nothing else will be a little bit more entertaining. And I'm a Mac person, so I'm going to assume I can just click this, right? No. How do we get this to go? Oh, okay. So, we start with a little quote. So, if you think you know who said this, raise your hand, and I'll call on you. But also remember, I am a school teacher, and if you're chewing gum, you don't get called on. Until man duplicates a blade of grass, nature can laugh at his so-called knowledge. Any takers on this one?
Jeb Bush?
No, let me give you a little hint on this one. You may have driven by his house. He's not too far from here. Very good, Thomas Edison. Trees cause more pollution than automobiles do. This is a, who is it? Ronald Reagan, very good, 1981. Very famous quote from him. Mining is like a search and destroy mission. No one? Stuart Udall. Yeah, good guy. Every American expects and deserves clean air. Then we can act on that belief. Then we can set an example for the rest of the world to follow. Nice quote. Any takers? Whoa. That's too bad. It isn't pollution that's causing harm to the environment. It's the impurities in our air. Now, every time I've given this one, you've gotten it. Who is it?
W.
Yeah. Just a little bit longer, guys. A little bit longer than we're past this. I do not intend that our natural resources shall be exploited by the few against the interests of the many. Very appropriate for this conference, I thought. But we have to go back quite some time. President Roosevelt. Good thing is Dennis covered a lot of what I was going to say, so I get to shorten this up, which I agreed to do, so I will kind of blow through this. Horse Creek, we got involved with Horse Creek in trying to get an OFW designation a number of years ago. And there's a lot of opposition from a lot of people from it, but at the time, it kind of met the criteria for an OFW. And we always kind of were scratching our head as to, well, why are people opposed to an OFW designation? That just means that you can't pollute the water. And if you're an industry, then you're within the watershed of the Horse Creek. Well, certainly you shouldn't be polluting it. And we kind of hit our head against the wall a number of times, as it did a number of different agencies. But it's not an OFW, and it could be, it should be. It needs to be revisited. That's one of the things that we kind of wrap up with on here. We know that Mosaic is the big player right now as far as fertilizer goes. They're doing quite well. These may be a little bit outdated. A year ago, their shares were at $27, and last time I checked, it was $114, and that was like a week ago. And we've seen the price of phosphate really jump up. So there's a lot of money here involved in the process. And I think a lot of it has to do with this ethanol fiasco that we're kind of going through right now and the alternative energy supplies. And do you know that it's almost impossible to buy hops to brew beer? Because most of your hops growers have shifted to corn. I mean, if the beer drinkers don't get upset over this, I don't know. But in terms of the overall economic impact, we know when you have a comparison between the natural resources that people use in the industry itself as a whole, there's not much of a comparison. This is something that Charlotte County put together a couple of years ago, kind of showing that, you know, looking at what goes on in the Peace River Basin economically probably is a lot more viable than the phosphate industry as a whole. But we have to kind of consider the impact that this industry does. If you're employed in phosphate, then certainly this is an important industry for you. If you're not employed, then you're probably employed in something that will have its impact with it. So a comparison between the two is very important. We're very concerned with what the future holds. We have 30 years of mining ahead of us, and we want to make sure that it's done in the least environmentally destructive manner possible, and also that it's justified. We want policymakers to realize that this is a non-renewable, limited resource of national significance. And if we get rid of it within 30 years or less, then we're going someplace else for it. And that just kind of seems strategically very reckless to do. So what's the rush? If everything plays out the way that it is, we're looking at 130,000 acres of land that is thrown up in the air. The matrix is extracted, and we're led to believe that they can put it back the way that it was, or something very similar to it, and do it in a short time frame with very little impact. We also know that this is an industry that has a lot of history in terms of spills, and I won't go into the details of those. And we also know that there was a spill recently as 2004 in Riverview. And we also know something about Tenerock as a legacy that is left behind as a reclaimed area that's now open to the public and is being used for as a fish management area. And our concern with this, which I believe Bill Bile was the one that brought this to light, was a study that EPA put out there that showed that there were some real concerns about this former processing area. That 2 out of 14 places that were surveyed had some real toxicity to them, of real concern. What Minnesota 88 did as a result of the EPA study that never went to final draft is we requested several times over the years that additional studies be done on Tenerock, and within the last few years, it's been like beating your head against the wall. You're trying to get EPA to do something. But the concern here is that there's more than Tenerock. There are 14 other sites throughout the state of Florida that are open to the public that are former processing areas. And it'd be nice to know if they're toxic. It'd be nice to know if we can get an overall study done that looks at the lands that the public have access to that are former phosphate lands are things that we should be concerned about. And I don't know what it's going to take. I think it's going to take time to get some people that maybe retire, maybe move on, maybe new administration, before we can get back to really doing studies that need to be done. One of the things that we hear about as far as a temporary impact to phosphate mining is that during the mining activity, the land retains water as it's being mined. And supposedly it's only a temporary impact. What you see here is water that's not supposed to be there. That water is supposed to be someplace else. Maybe it's supposed to be in the sky. Maybe it's supposed to be in the groundwater. Maybe it's supposed to be in Horse Creek. It's not supposed to be there. So these temporary impacts we're concerned with become permanent, long-term impacts. The industry is very good at creating lakes. And I always kind of scratch my head and kind of, you know, doesn't quite make sense to put a lake where there isn't a lake already. And some areas, such as Hardy County, seem to be very accepting of the fact that reclamation means creating lakes so that you can then build houses around it in the future and get a better market. Forget that Hardy County doesn't have a lot of lakes naturally. 30 years from now, we might be seeing something totally different there. And also, there's talk with the phosphate mining compact that the industry is going to dig a 20,000 acre hole and give it to the public and call that a reservoir. And okay, where's it going to go and what kind of impacts is it going to have? And
You know, is the water going to be enhanced with radionuclides? I don't know. But you kind of have to scratch your head and wonder about, you know, who comes up with these ideas. But putting lakes where lakes aren't supposed to be and moving wetlands around where they're not naturally occurring has some long-term impacts, no doubt about it. Clay settling areas, you know, we have 126,000 acres of clay settling areas that have been built since phosphate mining began in Florida. We have about 81,000 acres still unreclaimed. Now let's clean up our mess before we continue on. Now, we have a history of challenging the phosphate industry and various operations that they've done over the years. And this is just kind of a partial listing. And given enough time, I'd go through them with you. But early on, our focus was on phosphogypsum and the impacts of phosphogypsum stacks and trying to get better regulation on the state and national level in regulatory aspects of it. And that's basically where we began. In 2001, we got involved with phosphate mining. And this is the one that kind of started it for Charlotte County. We filed against IMC Phosphate, the Manson-Jenkins mine, which is in Manatee County. And Charlotte County kind of joined forces and really took the ball and ran with it. And probably the reason that we're here is because of Charlotte County Commission stepping up to the plate when they needed to. And for wherever we're at right now with the Phosphate Mining Compact, we have to remember there's been some very good things that have happened in the past. And we're better off as a result of it. The next step, who knows?
A couple more minutes.
Yep, 2003, we had challenged our standing on ONA. There was a law that was passed by the Florida legislature a couple of years ago that said that you had to have 25 members in a county in order to get standing. And we didn't have standing in Hardy County and kind of took it to court. And unfortunately, we lost. And so the law still stands that you have to have certain membership in a county to challenge a permit. 2004, we didn't really have a legal challenge, but it was something that we called for public hearing where there was an NPDES permit renewal on Wingate Creek, which is in the headwaters of the Nyaka River. And given more time, I'll tell you a little bit more about it. But if this thing fails, this clay settling area fails, we're kind of wiping out Nyaka River State Park, quite frankly, and everything downstream. What's next? What I would encourage you to do is to pay attention to the NPDES permits, the new ones that are being issued and the ones that are being renewed. We're quite interested in looking at the next OFW NPDES permit, one that is new, and whether or not they can meet the criteria of not allowing discharge off of their mine site. So that's one of our focuses. We have phosphogypsum stacks. We have a bunch of problems with it. Not too much economic value. It's been banned for use, and I think it has something to do with how radioactive it can be for a long period of time. And we've seen these. This is one of the phosphogypsum stacks that failed. We have a very bad spill. And this I wanted to briefly touch on. HBK Holdings, a very important company in phosphogypsum, they bought Piney Point, which Piney Point went bankrupt. It was a Mulberry Corporation that the state of Florida acquired and left us with about 1.2 billion gallons of tainted sulfuric acid water that we had to get rid of. And you in this area probably knew about it because they had to barge it out to the Gulf of Mexico and get rid of it before the dam overflowed and kind of annihilated and everything in the Port Manatee area. But this company came in and bought Piney Point for $4.3 million after DEP spent about $93 million trying to close it down and clean it up. And the interesting aspect about this is that this is the first one that has been bought by someone other than, you know, someone associated with the phosphate industry. What happens here is going to set the groundwork for what happens with the other 25 phosphogypsum stacks that eventually may go bankrupt in the future. So this is one to watch. In 2010, this company assumes long-term responsibility of a phosphogypsum stack. And I don't know if that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing, but it's one that we need to watch. So you'll be hearing about Piney Point in the future. It's not a done deal by any means. That stuff's going to be around for a while. We got 50 years of trying to get rid of fossil gypsum, and we still don't have an answer how to do it. FIPR, they've come across with some ideas, trying to use it in a landfill, maybe use it as a roadbed, try to get rid of it any way that they can. We're very skeptical of FIPR's activities. In fact, quite frankly, if I have time, I got a quiz. Give me the quiz. Who is FIPR? A, the Florida Institute of Phosphate Industry. B, the development arm and research arm for the phosphate industry. C, an agency that has lost its focus and credibility and should be deauthorized and eliminated. And D, all of the above. I'll let you answer that yourself. What can you do? If you're in a county that has mining regulations, then you need to look at what's going on with the reclamation. That's going to be the key. We need to look at a phosphate environmental impact statement. Look at enforcing existing regulations and so on and so forth. But I wanted to just briefly talk about what's needed as far as an overview to try to link everything together. You always hear about the environmental impact statement for mining. It needs to be done. We need to take a look at an overall industry impact that's going on in the state of Florida. We need to be able to link the mining impacts to the processing, to the waste disposal. Until we get a picture of that, and every Title V permits reviewed that's going on with phosphate, and every NPDES permit, we'll never get a picture of what this industry is doing in the state of Florida. So when you talk about, or you hear about an environmental impact statement, we're not just talking mining. We're talking about the entire industry. Something was done back in 1970 that took an act of Congress to get done. And that was an overall view of the industry. That's what we need to do today. Revisit and look at everything that's going on and then decide whether or not this is an industry we want to have in the state of Florida. And with that, I will end it. So
thank you very much. Thank you very much, Glenn. Our next presentation is entitled Threats to Lives and Lifestyles from Industrial Mining in a Rural Southwest Florida Community. And we're talking about the Corkscrew Road area. Presentation was originally intended to be presented by Bill Lytle and Kevin Hill, but their presentation today will be made by Peggy Apgar Schmidt. And we'll have her ready in just a second. You know, in these presentations, it's always important to have an opportunity to address questions, and we're very sensitive to that. You have sat there, and we've had a chance for a few questions, but we'll have probably 20 minutes after the presentations are over, and it looks to me like most of the presenters have managed to stick around, and hopefully you'll get a chance formally to ask those questions and perhaps informally throughout the lunch. Peggy?
Thank you. I am pitch hitting today. Unfortunately, Pastor Lytle's mother passed away 2 days ago, and so I've been handed this, and it's some presentations that Kevin Hill made for the Aggregate Task Force and for a hearing that we had several months ago on a new mine on Corkscrew Road. Before I get started, let me just say a couple things. We've had, in Southwest Florida, we've had 3 mining applications in the last several years, and we have not been blessed to have a lot of people on our supporting our group the way it is in Citrus County and perhaps some other areas. We've had 3 main people or sets of people. Kevin Hill currently is kind of leading the charge. Jim and Bill Lytle, the Lytle brothers, led the charge against the Schwab mine, which was the first mine that attempted to open up on East Corkscrew Road, the first rock mine, and that petition is now, I guess they're in a Burt Harris action against the county since they lost. Richard, my husband's on the first row, Richard Smith, and I led the fight against the Westwind mine expansion. Westwind was a little dirt mine that wanted to go up into a great big rock mine. I personally spent 14, 16-hour days for over 14 months and collapsed after that. So I'm on burnout leave. I've just been called back in for this. And as I say, Kevin Hill is leading things now. The three mining applications that we've had have cost over $300,000 out of the pockets of the citizens there. Richard and I personally spent over $100,000 in our fight. We don't have a lot of people who have money. We have a lot of people, but not a lot of people who have money. We've got young families. Well, you know the story. So how do I do next? Okay, I'm not working here, Nora. I'll try this. Oh, this may work. Okay, here's the DRGR. It's the Density Reduction Groundwater Resource Area. It's currently being studied. This is where the rock miners want to mine. In 89, when we did our LEAP plan under the growth management law, state law, this area was designated as low density and for groundwater recharge because Lee County had more platted areas than any other county in the state of Florida. This is Lee County. And this area right here is the DRGR. In the DRGR, we also have well fields. And you can see where two major well fields, actually three, that supply south west the south part of Lee County with water. We also have a lot of wetlands. As you can see, all the wetlands through the DRGR. It's a prime wetland area, which is why it was designated as a recharge area. This is the major flowways. The mines are built right on top of the flowways, and the mines that are asking for permits now are right in the middle of all those flowways and the wetlands. This is a little bit about the ecological character. There's been various little studies about the DRGR, and finally the Lee County Commission decided that they didn't understand how they all related to each other, so they hired a company called McLean to tell them what the studies said. And essentially, they said that the DRGR lands provide large contiguous habitat area, which is important to wide-ranging species. They contain extensive interconnected wetlands, provide important connections to nearby and farther-reaching ecosystems, and they connect both hydrologically and ecologically to nearby bays and coastal water systems. It's also a panther consultation area, level one and level two, throughout almost the entire DRGR. Also other protected species, the black bear, the wood stork, the Sydney, where are the rest of the species? It's a whole bunch of species in there that are protected. There's some more wood storks on Corkscrew Road. The Audubon Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary is about 3 miles south of Corkscrew Road, and it also, I believe, borders on the DRGR area. This is just some environment. These are the citizens in the area enjoy agriculture. It's primarily an agricultural area and a rural residential area. These are the rural residences within the DRGR area. And there are quite a few residences, but they're spread out. They're 10-acre plots, 15-acre plots, 20-acre plots, 100, 200 acres. So the rural residences, this is a whole community, but it's not a gated community. And one of the questions that's come up in Lee County permitting is this is not a residential area, because the mental model is a residential area is zero lot line and gated community. And somehow rural doesn't count, or didn't count when we started. It's counting more and more. Now this will take your breath away. These are the permitted mines in Lee County. And when the Lee County Code first started, there was a map called Map 14 that said the mines will be in the, we know where the mines are, they're right there, they'll be in their designated area. Everyone knows where they are. But what the miners are claiming now is that the entire DRGR area can be mined because of that statement. The understanding of the residents who moved out there is that no, the mines are here, so they didn't pick houses here, although there are a few residences. They picked houses farther down where they wouldn't be located near the mines. But I can't remember now, 11, I think, new mine applications. This one here, Corkscrew Plantation, is for 6,000 acres. I believe they want to go 125 feet deep. This just takes my breath away. the property that Richard and I owned, and I'll tell you, we sold it. We left. And I'll tell you more of that story as we go on and why I had to leave. But this has now been taken over by a group of people who promised they would never mine it and is now, of course, signed up for a mining application, not only with the property that we sold, but with all of the surrounding property that they've also been able to buy up. The mining application is also part of a residential plan as well. Traffic safety is one of the concerns, one of the major concerns for mining in that area. I'll just show you some of the pictures. At least the kids weren't in the wreck. Corkscrew Road is the only egress and ingress for the residents who live in that area. It's the only egress and for the mine trucks that take their product and their supply chain from the mine pits to wherever they're taking it. This is just mining, we call it trucker trash, mining industry debris. They dump a load. Sometimes you can see where these loads are dumped here. This load is here. Oftentimes you'll find the load dumped right on the road. We had an incident once when it was foggy early morning, woman was driving to work, dark, that load was dumped early in the morning and bump, she hit it. Can't tell you the number of windshields broken by flying debris and flying rock. The roads have been pitted. We've been going round and round with the county DOT to get the roads resurfaced. This is not the worst of the pitting, but when it is wet, you do hydroplane. Also, the McLean study said, the project team found that there were a few major components of the overall character of the DRGR lands that were not described in sufficient detail in any of the studies that were done. And that was the ecological impacts associated with mining activities. So finally, the county is getting a wake-up call that it's time to take notice. And this, Sydney, I'm sure you'll talk about that more later. This is on Kevin Hill's property. These are some trees on the front of his property in 1988 after the mine went in, first started the Westland Corkscrew Mine in particular, which he's a mile away from. Those trees have died in 2003. Another view of them. This is the property that Richard and I owned and has sold. If we get to it, I have some other slides so you can see the before and after. But this is 2007 and 2003. You can see them begin to die, and you know they died over time. This used to be a pine upland area. If we get to those slides, I'll show you some pictures of the what was a beautiful pine upland forest, which is now a wetland. And on the Cypress Bay petition that they've submitted to the county, they've now called this area, which was a pine upland, they're now calling it a wetland. Okay, this is to the aggregate task force for, you know, just for the purposes today, I'm gonna skip it. But Lee County is now entering a new era where national and international mining companies are looking long term. I mean, they're looking way out as far as they can go, and they're grabbing for land in the Lee County area so that they can do their long term planning. So our future in that whole area, our aquifer recharge, depends on what happens now. And the panther, the habitat, the wildlife, all of it depends on what we decide in the next couple of months. Okay, I'm gonna jump to hopefully another presentation to show you some other photos. Get there. Okay, this is one of the efforts that Kevin Hill is trying to do is community organization. So there's a viable community plan that's part of the Lee Charter. And of course, most of the areas to be addressed that come up have to do with mining. Again, that's where we live. Why do we live out here? And I have this slide here because I want to talk a minute about mental models. One of the things that has happened with the developers, the miners, the people coming to the county, and the county also, somebody said earlier, I think it was Swift Mud is in the business of permitting. The county is in the business of permitting. That's how they see their business. That's the mental model that they operate off of. And a mental model serves like a filter. what gets through the filter is only what fits that mental model. So all this other data that's coming at you doesn't ever get through the filter. And we're banging on that mental model, so some other things start to come through. And so out here, when the first mining applications was said, oh, there's nobody out there. It's out in the middle of nowhere. So the mental model, oh, let's fill it up with something. Oh, it's no value unless we mine it, unless we put, you know, developments on it. Well, out here is pretty nice. As well as all of the habitat things. This is early, early morning, dear. Wonderful to be up in the early morning. You can see the stars just, I mean, the stars are going away. You can see the stars at night. I don't know if this hyperlink, I couldn't get this hyperlink to work. This is a video Richard shot in our backyard, right out of our dining room window. And the video shows the deer playing. It's a wonderful sight, but unfortunately I couldn't get the hyperlink to work here. There's gopher tortoises on the property that we sold, which they had to claim on species because we'd already listed it. Wood store, I mean, this is spoonbill. I had great pictures of cranes. Oh, the pigs, everybody loves the pigs. The snakes, everybody loves the snakes, but better when they're outside than when they come inside, right? And of course, the agricultural area and the activities that you have that you do not have in urban communities. This is the only place that you have them is in rural areas. Okay, you've seen some of these. Why did the people choose to live out in this area? There were no mines when people moved out here. And as I said earlier, map 14 in our lead plan said the mines would be one area, and then it, you know, the mines are pushing on. Oh. One of the techniques that mines have used in Lee County is they'll come in as a small little dirt mine and get a special exception, which is an easy permit to get. And then once that mine is established, then they'll go back to the county, and the county leads them down this road. The county helps them do this. And then they go back and say, oh, we want to expand now. Oh, well, you need this kind of permit. But then the county staff report will recommend for approval because there's a mine already there and no one has complained, or the complaints aren't bad enough, or we haven't yelled loud enough. So it's, again, they're in the business of permitting. We want them to be in the business of protecting the citizenry that lives out there. We want a different mental model. Mines attract mines. We want them to look at cumulative impacts. There's none of the mines are required to look at cumulative impacts. If you think about the picture I showed you of all of the mines that are going to be there, the cumulative impacts are going to be incredible. Wildlife as well. And again, the issue is what is predominantly residential? The Lee County plan will not allow impingement on residential areas. So it all rests on that mental model of what is residential and what is not. Also, the mines, we've had a hard time. We've finally gotten Lee County to be a little bit more proactive in monitoring the mines. But in general, they'll come and they'll reprimand them, and the problems still keep going. Some of the problems will stop, others keep going. One of the biggest problems, of course, is noise. Kevin lived a mile from the mine. My husband Richard and I lived a mile from the mine. Kevin talks here about wanting to go on his back porch and have a cup of coffee. This, of course, was after he repaired his roof, because the back porch roof fell in after the first blast at the mine. Went through the whole porch, you know, the roof of the porch ceiling, the porch fell down. But now what he hears out there is the beepers and the drag lines and the steel cables and the clanking drag lines and that sort of thing. Richard and I used to put on earplugs in order to sleep at night when the mines were cheating and operating at night, because we couldn't sleep for the noise a mile away.
Have 5 more minutes.
Thank you. Okay, so let me, well, I'm not going to show you all these, but we videotaped them cheating. That's how we got the county to make the changes. Right now, they were cited in 2005 for these environmental violations. You can see where they have a fueling vehicle that's leaking like crazy. 2007, they're still back out there citing them. Nothing's changed. Containment systems are a problem. And again, cited in 2005, nothing changed. Still, the problems with the containment system. Is that leaking into the water? At what rate and for how long? You've seen the dead trees, and you've seen the traffic safety, trucker trash. Oh, I'm hoping that I can make this work. if I can get this to work, I'll end with this. This is a video that Richard took. Be patient. Oh, it's going to start. Early morning, Richard and I went to the end of our driveway, 6 a.m. Jake Britt. Needless to say, we didn't need alarm clocks. Now this goes on for a while. I'm going to let you listen for a while because it's what we heard all day, every day, when the mines were running and people were buying dirt. There's a stop sign when you come out of the mine entrance before you get to Corkscrew Road, and you should stop at that stop sign and look both ways. They don't stop.
We're about out of time, Peggy.
And it goes on. Thank you for the opportunity to talk today. We could spend 3 hours with you all.